You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios, the local, the state, the national man. We cover down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, yes, this show is solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, it is Thursday. But let me jump over to my comments here for a minute. So I got to tell you, I was pumping gas at a local station near an interstate off-ramp once, and I thought I heard a bomb go off. I mean, like, seriously. It was that loud. It was that much of a boom. It reminded me of the sound of a car bomb, a VBIED that went off next to my convoy in Baghdad. It was that loud. It turns out it was an 18-wheeler whose load had shifted as he rounded the off-ramp curve, and he just heeled on over and slammed the ground. And listen, I've been in military aircraft. I've watched as the loadmasters work to distribute the loads and personnel so the weight was evenly distributed. It's a heck of a thing for a cargo plane to be off balance. But the worst for being top-heavy may be sailing vessels. When a ship is designed and built, it is often what you can't see below the waterline that makes it an effective ship. How deep the draft is, the size of the keel, may be what prevents that ship from literally capsizing under its own weight. Well, let me tell you about one of the worst maritime disasters ever. We've all heard about the Titanic. The Titanic struck an iceberg in 1912. Nearly 1,500 people drowned. You may have also heard about the Lusitania. Torpedoed by a German submarine, the Lusitania claimed 785 lives. But have you ever heard of the Eastland? The Eastland. In the port of Chicago, while it was still tethered to the dock, the Eastland was loaded with over 2,500 passengers. It was considered to be an unsafe ship by those who worked around it, whose draft, the keel, was originally designed to support its first life as a barge. The Eastland literally rolled over under its top-heavy weight, and 844 passengers lost their lives that day. Well, the account from the Smithsonian Magazine says this: critical to a boat's stability is what is known as its metacentric height. Floating objects are like an upside-down pendulum with a center of gravity and the ability to roll or heel to either side before righting itself. The distance between fully upright and the maximum heel, the point beyond which it will capsize, is its metacentric height. And for such a ship, where the distribution of passengers was highly variable, normal practice would have been to provide a metacentric height of 2 to 4 feet fully loaded. Changes made to the Eastland over time reduced its metacentric height to just 4 inches. What that basically means is it didn't have a keel. It was built to be a barge. And then one day someone got the great idea of converting it, but they converted it above the water. They didn't convert it below the water. Well, listen, on that particular day, it was supposed to have been a celebratory day. Western Electric had shut down their operations. The plant was shut down. They were taking all their employees and their families on a day-long excursion to a park across Lake Michigan. It was a huge factory-paid picnic, had bands playing. It was set to be a day that no one would forget, and it was, but for all the wrong reasons. It was July 24th, 1915, just 10 days after the sinking of the Lusitania. There was a new set of regulations now that required all sailing vessels to increase the number of lifeboats and flotation devices. They did that, but all of it added an incredible amount of weight to the Eastland's top decks. And the passenger manifest that day shows the boat was also allowed to be overloaded. But worst of all, the Eastland had been known to be unstable because its keel had never been improved as the ship was morphed from a barge to a Great Lakes passenger liner. With a wink and a nod, it had always been just signed off by the inspectors, despite the fact that the harbor crews who worked around it, they called it a hoodoo ship. It was known to list heavily while it sat in port. On that morning in 1915, as whole families boarded in their party clothes and began dancing to the band on the top deck, the top-heavy Eastland is said to have suddenly listed 45 degrees to port. And as all its cargo and passengers then began to shift and water began to come in through the lower portholes, suddenly, everything went bad, and within 2 minutes, the entire ship rolled over right there in the harbor. Whole families, moms, dads, children, all drowned that day. One recounting of the aftermath says the water was so filled with bodies you couldn't see the river. Smithsonian Magazine again said this. It said, quote, on Wednesday, July 28th, Chicago was a city of funerals. So many were scheduled that there were not enough hearses. The Marshall Field and Company provided 39 trucks. 52 grave diggers were hired to work 12-hour days. They couldn't keep up with the demand. Nearly 150 graves had to be dug at one cemetery alone, and by day's end that day, almost 700 Eastland victims were buried. All of this because no one chose to say anything about a ship with virtually no keel. A ship they kept building up, but never chose to properly build down. It became so top-heavy, so unwieldy, it literally capsized right there at the port, not because of a torpedo or an iceberg, but because of the self-inflicted wound of being built top-heavy. And over 800 people lost their lives in just 20 feet of water. Now let me switch gears on you. Keeping the concept of being top-heavy in mind, what about government? If you imagine a government being a ship, which is an analogy, by the way, that Governor Ivey used several times when she took office as Governor Bentley resigned. She said her job then was to right the ship of state. Well, what happens when a government becomes so top-heavy it can't sustain itself? Well, in my view, the keel of government is the people. We are there to support and sustain and also to be effectively served by the topside, but there has to be a balance, a metacentric height between government and its people that says, hey, if you can't draw deep enough, then don't keep loading up top, right? Well, right now, we're in a position where the Alabama state government has grown more in the past few years than the governments of California and New York. As neighboring states have openly worked to provide tax relief to their citizens, Alabama's government has spent surpluses thus far on itself. We've seen things in the past few years I never expected to see, with shutdowns of businesses and churches and schools, individuals told to mask up their children. Our own state-funded UAB developed an app for use in tracking people's movements and telling them when to quarantine. And right now there's a discussion underway about whether or not to expand the Obamacare Medicaid provisions and put more of Alabama's citizens into government-run health care. And that's just Alabama. The federal government is certainly top-heavy, with the ability to claim a right to direct its attention to virtually every aspect of our lives. New bills have passed to put state-funded charging stations on highways, fund green energy solutions that cannot otherwise stand up without government subsidies. A potential hiring is afoot to employ another 87,000 IRS agents. Regulations have changed the way the family farms can operate. And we've gone from being a net exporter of oil and gas to requiring imports simply because, somebody in government said so. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not so libertarian in my leanings that I don't see the value in government. I really do. And I'm a fan of some aspects of government, and I know that there are true functions in a society that are intended for government to provide, and life would be worse without them. But Ronald Reagan once said, a government big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take away everything you have. We have to right-size government. We have to ensure that the keel, the people, that are below the waterline, so to speak, that they are seen. We are not so outweighed as a people by a top-heavy government that we cannot even remain on an even keel at the dock. We need to see measurable tax relief from Montgomery. We need to return to a commitment to streamline government operations. We need to know that as a red state, that those principles matter in our state capital. And we need to stop being so top-heavy, lest we capsize under our own weight. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. I'd never heard the story of the Eastland. As I was preparing this, I was looking for questions related to top-heavy ships. And believe it or not, that story came up, and there it was. But folks, that's government, man. That is government. And if you keep growing it on top, disregarding the keel, which is the people that is there for, you create something so off-balance that you run the risk of it basically capsizing under its own weight. We can't let that happen. We have to right-size government and live more within our means. State and federal. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid, conservative, just plain right. Well, Yeah. By the way, I got a couple of texts. One with regards to the capsizing story. I just said Brian from Huntsville wants to know. He says, "I hope Hank Johnson was not right about Guam." I don't know if you remember the story, but I think it was Representative or Congressman Hank Johnson, a Democrat, was in a military committee of some type, you know, maybe House Armed Services. I've forgotten. And there was a general who was telling him about buildup and on Guam, and he says, "Aren't y'all concerned though that if we keep putting more stuff on Guam, the island might flip over?" And the general just stared at him and said something along the lines of, "No, Congressman, we're not concerned about that at all." I also got a text here, Boomer, from John from Huntsville. He says, "Hey, Phil, if your studio looks like a mess, it's because Boomer and Yaffe threw a wild, crazy party while you were gone. Coca-Cola, peanuts, cake, even alcohol. Hey, Phil," they didn't. Anyway, he goes on to say some other stuff. Okay,
that's
so
funny.
And Tracy from Athens, by the way, says, "So glad y'all are back." Woohoo! We're glad to be back too.
Yes,
thank you, Tracy.
We are.
So here's the deal. First of all, Tuesday, you know, I am still a practicing attorney. I have tried to scale my practice so that it does not conflict with the show. But every once in a while, a client has to have their rightful attention, and I spent all day in trial. And one on Tuesday. It went from early in the morning to the evening. So anyway, Yaffe sat in for me, and I really appreciated it. And then yesterday, though, was also a special day, Boomer. So
it was. It was a special day. My grandfather on my father's side had passed away this past weekend.
Yeah.
And we had his memorial service yesterday, and it was honestly just really special.
It was. Yeah. And so, yeah, for those of y'all that don't know, if you haven't heard me say it before, I've known Boomer since he was just a boomette. He was a little bitty guy. But I've known
Small.
Boomer most of his life. His family and my family are also very close. And I've known his grandparents. In fact, I believe your grandparents sent me a care package when I was in Baghdad.
They did. And I think they also mentioned something about I think you were on the front page of the Oregonian newspaper.
Yeah. I was actually attached to an Oregon infantry battalion.
Yeah.
And so the Oregonian newspaper wrote articles, and next thing you know, they're sending me clips saying, "We just saw you on the front page of the Oregonian." But anyway, loved your grandparents. I love your grandparents. Your grandma was the sweetest she can be, and your granddad. What a great. So, by the way, Boomer, thank you for your grandfather's service. The funeral was at the Veterans Cemetery in Montevallo.
Yeah.
And your granddad, how cool is this? Your granddad was in the Army band stationed in Berlin and wound up having occasion to play for President Eisenhower.
Right.
I mean,
it's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. And then he went on to have, and I loved, I think it was your dad. Was it your dad or your Uncle Craig that talked about legacy?
My uncle talked about
uncle,
the legacy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just the legacy he created in his own children for having a love for the Lord, mm-hmm. a love for each other, a love for music, because pretty much everybody in the family was required to play an instrument at some point.
They were.
And they all do, and that's how your parents even met.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's just in our family, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it was a very special day, and he will be greatly missed and continue to be loved, but we know where he is, and we celebrate that.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. And I was proud to be there with y'all. Love your family, and I also love, by the way, if you don't mind me saying it, the last words he said on Earth,
mm-hmm.
were "I love you" to your son.
Yeah, that was pretty special, and something that we'll cherish and continue to remind my son of. You know,
well, there you
years.
Go. That's mm-hmm. exactly right. Well, yeah, so big doings the last couple of days. We've had pretty good reasons to not be in the studio. But
So thank you, Ruffians, for holding on.
That's right.
Waiting for us.
That's right. But, hey, in the 2 minutes I've got left, Boomer, I got to say, you're running close on donuts and push-ups, bro.
Oh, I know. Guys, all right, so we gotta step up the game on listening to these podcasts. I need 800 more listens.
Today's the 8th. You've got till the 10th. So he needs 800 downloads. Otherwise, the other day, if you didn't hear it, we had a bet. I said we'd get to 100,000 downloads by the end of the month.
Right.
Boomer says by the 10th. Well, then I forgot we were going to be out for a couple of days for Thanksgiving. And Boomer, we had no idea we were going to be out for a couple of days because of the funeral and stuff.
Right, right.
So now it's running slower than expected because we didn't have new shows for download. And you're so, about 800 short, bro.
800 short. So, I know. I was teasing you earlier. I'm gonna split up all the podcasts tonight in like 10-minute segments so everybody has to download 10 minutes. Not really, guys.
All I know is the other day I did push-ups while you ate donuts, and I'm looking forward to a box of Krispy Kremes is what I'm saying.
You said you wanted those apple fritters.
Oh, man, get me an apple fritter. I'm good. Get me an apple fritter. I'm good all day, bro.
Oh, man.
Oh, all right. Listen, do I hear music or not?
Almost.
I thought I did.
10 seconds.
Maybe it was angels. I don't know what I just heard. All right. Well, listen, we've got a great show for you. Coming up top of the hour, Tripp Pittman, former state senator from Baldwin County, a double budget chair. He's chaired both of the budgets at some point in Alabama. He's going to be on with us to talk about Medicaid expansion. In the meantime, we got a triple dipper I'm kicking off in that same vein. Number one coming up next, Medicaid and Obamacare. Yes, they go together. That's what we're dealing with. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.